Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. On the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, 5 days a week, we'll be doing a three-hour broadcast with a musician or a scientist or a doctor or a journalist or a politician or somebody who's got real interesting stuff to talk about. Because, as we all know, ignorance manifests when there is a lack of abundant information. And many would agree, some would disagree, that the current media apparatus of mainstream talk radio and mainstream media is simply not up to the task. At the very least, it's because of the volumetric nature of these topics that we discuss on this program that actually require several hours of successive airtime in order to get the information properly out, rather than an audio soundbite, as I call them, audio nibbles. And my very special guest today is John the Baptist, Illuminati Congo. He's a Rasta, and we're going to talk to him today. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. It's an honor to be on the program with you. Thanks for reaching out.
Well, in fact, it was one of my listeners that suggested you, and in fact, it's usually one of the listeners that suggest every guest for the show, so it's as much their show as it is mine, except I have to work all the levers, you know, like the man behind the curtain. Yes. Now, anyway, we've already done this, but it bears repeating because we had a few technical difficulties earlier on, so we're kind of like doing a do-over. I want you to explain to the audience your name, John the Baptist Illuminati Congo, in its full extent.
Well, John the Baptist, ever since I was little, people have called me John the Baptist just because I've always been into spiritual sciences, and so they just associated me with that since my name is John. And as time went by, I just studied the name more, and I feel like I began to really embody the principle of John and the esoteric principles of John as well in my life. And then Illuminati Congo, I just took Illuminati because I feel that and I have evidence and research that, one, we're all enlightened to some extent. We all have something to offer. But two, the Illuminati, I feel, was started originally with a purpose to dismantle superstition and dogma, and to dismantle the Pope and the Vatican and the false kings and royalty of the earth, and to return sovereignty to the people. And so that's one thing I've always saw in the original meaning of the Illuminati. And I've associated that with myself. And then, of course, Nati Kongo in Rasta is it's a name for Rasta, for someone with, you know, thick dreadlocks. So Illuminati Kongo just came together for me to mean illuminating naturally or native. Everyone's natively illumined or illuminating. And I just wanted to help dispel the superstition and the fear consciousness and the blame that's put on just this blanket statement name of Illuminati, when there's actually real culprits to some of the conspiracies that are happening, and you wouldn't be able to find who they are by the name Illuminati.
Now, can we also think about this when people talk about the Illuminati? It's a generalization, you know, of a particular culture. Wouldn't you agree?
For sure. It definitely is a generalization. I feel that it might be an overgeneralization, and we might be applying the term sometimes when it's not warranted, because the term actually... To keep calling the conspirators the Illuminati when it's a name that means the enlightened ones, instead of using the terms, which we know words have magic power to them, I feel that we ought to redirect the power to the people. And so instead of using that as a general term for the ruling elite, I would rather use terms like the ruling elite, or the Bilderberg Group, the Trilateral Commission, and Council on Foreign Relations, and really get to be more descriptive about it. I feel Illuminati is used, so now people just talk about, oh, Jay-Z, Illuminati. Oh, there's a pyramid right there. It's Illuminati, and now it's a big fad and confusion, and it's leading people away from actually being able to do anything because they're scared of this big Wizard of Oz, this big Illuminati.
We had a New Zealand musician sing a NWA song, Frack the Police, in a club in New Zealand called Illuminati, and the cops got called and dragged him away and stuck him in the cells for the night. You can't make this stuff up. It's hilarious.
That is wild.
Yeah, I remember also we were at a protest. Do you know about Jane Burgermeister, exposed a whole big swine flu scam way back in the day, how they were trying to ship out contaminated vaccines? And so we were protesting outside the consulate that was responsible for holding her against her will. And they called security on us. And, of course, the company was called Matrix Security.
Hell no. That's pretty tripped out that they're... They're just taking the name Matrix, saying, hey, we're keeping you locked in.
Yeah. Well, and also another point. Have you noticed how a lot of organizations, the definitions of their name are actually the direct opposite of what they actually do?
Yeah, exactly. There's just a lot of meanings are taken away from things and used differently. It's like reverse psychology. I personally feel that there is an underlying source of divinity and the true supreme power in the universe is a benevolent one, and that it's actually co-orchestrating everything behind the scenes, and using even when groups try to use symbols for evil, I believe that even still that good will prevail, because as long as there's people in the world who are processing their consciousness and getting through their fears and returning those symbols back to the one, back to good, or in integrating, being an alchemist, I feel that we'll be able to raise above that same reactionary consciousness that this reverse symbolism has been used to stimulate and trigger.
Well, maybe the Illuminati name is backwards. Maybe instead of the enlightened ones, they just dumb everybody down instead.
Yep, the Dumbinati.
Yeah, the dumbest down, eh?
Yeah, that's pretty much what's... there is definitely a dumbing down happening where people are being taught to just accept ideas, accept predetermined philosophies, predetermined ideologies and scientific theories. Like if every scientist accepted every predetermined theory and conclusion and said, okay, well, that's the truth. All right, we're not going to go search any further. We'd be stuck on some real dumb business right now. So I think that that we always must encourage imagination and the thinking about our unlimited potential. I think that's what we ought to encourage, and there is a dumbing down being taught. People are being taught to limit that infinite potential.
I was talking with a couple of people on the radio some time ago, and we were talking about like possible doomsdays. You know how some people said, "Oh, Comet Eisen was going to get us, or Y2K was going to come against the 2012, etc., etc." None of which happened, of course. And I was talking to them about Fukushima and the Gulf of Mexico and the GMO food and all of these other toxic things that have basically ensured the destruction of life on Earth as we know it already anyway. And they're like, you can't solve it. You can't solve those problems. And they go, well, hold on a second. Is there a limit to human creativity? Is there only so much human creativity and then, yeah, it's all cut off at the knees and then there's just no more, you know?
Right.
I don't think so, and they didn't think so either. Okay, so right. That means that there's no possible way that anything is the end of the world because you've got infinite human creativity and potential that comes up with stuff that nobody even thought of possible, good and evil, come to think of it, to stop or start terrible incidents.
For sure. I'm in agreement with you. Like, there's a tradition in India of the Siddhas. The Siddhas are the alchemists who would take metals like mercury, which is toxic, and lead, and arsenic, and a lot of poisonous plants, things that would normally kill people when ingested. But they would do a process to these plants or to these metals with other herbs and with pressure and cooking and turn it into elixirs and use these as healing elixirs that were reported to help overcome even physical death. In their culture, they have examples in their history of people who supposedly overcame psychosomatic death and physical death and are still living in a physical body through like spiritualizing their cells with these herbs that are mixed with deadly poisons. And I personally feel that all the poisons and all the fuckery that's being spread right now, it could be detrimental. But going back to what I was saying, the alchemist always knows what to add to the equation to turn these things back to the one and turn these things back beneficial. And I think there's actually a mass scale of that going on right now, despite what people with sinister agendas may have thought they were doing with GMOs and with mercury and all the estrogen in the foods and in the plastics. I think the ascended masters behind the scene that are more powerful than the conspirators have a greater plan.
Are you telling me that there's this kind of mass spiritual judo war going on up there?
Yeah, somewhat. It's sort of up there and it's sort of in here. It's really more with us. Like, it's more with the humans that are choosing to see themselves as ascended and are choosing to see, hey, this stuff that's going on here, I recognize that it's happening, but I'm going to go within and create a vision in my mind of something else. Actually, if you're familiar with Gianvallo Melchizedek, I was listening to him the other day, and he was speaking about some radiation, one of the rods that hit in Aspen, Colorado, and caused like high levels of radiation, and the governments and agencies around there were preparing to evacuate people within 100 miles of Aspen, Colorado. And as they were about to make the announcement, the scientists discovered that the levels were going down. and going down and going down till they decreased lower than they were originally in Aspen. And then they got to the lowest, one of the lowest radiation spots on the whole planet. And supposedly, you know, Gianvallo has very, very imaginative theories as well. And supposedly the governments or the agencies talked to the ETs or extraterrestrials, and they said, no, they didn't do it. It was the humans. It's human intervention through different prayers and meditations that we're holding.
Mm-hmm. Well, if humans are that powerful, it means that we in some way construct our reality. And I was thinking about this the other day, that the things that you bring into the physical world, be it music or radio broadcasts or pieces of technology or what have you, they actually have a profound effect upon all different other aspects of your life, like mental, spiritual, and physical aspects. You can invent things that can actually affect all three.
True.
This occurs to me to be the one power that the human race has that makes us very, very different and quite, I don't know, unpredictable, for better or worse. This means that you can't really lock down everything and totally set it in stone. Sometimes,
yeah,
things come to light, and you better look at these things that come to light, not choose to not listen to them, because what do you gain by not listening to somebody or a new idea? What do you gain?
Not just ignorance, I would say.
You already had it. You don't actually obtain any new ignorance by continuing to remain as ignorant as you were.
Right. You just expand in your ignorance.
Well, ignorance doesn't expand. It contracts.
Okay, I can see that.
Awareness expands.
I see that totally.
You know, it's one of these very interesting thoughts that you have, and you're like, that actually makes a whole lot of sense there. Because when we think about expanding consciousness, again, like human creativity, does there appear to be a limit? You know, there's only so much consciousness that you can expand, and then that's it. I don't think that's true either. So,
right. So that's why I feel that once you're certain, or once you feel you've grown up or learned everything there is to learn, that's sort of when you begin to grow in ignorance. Like it, I feel that you're the more certain you are, that means even the ideas that you had that might have been good before, now that you're cut off to new growth, Those things become like a cancer's growth because they once served you, but failing to relearn and learn new things is usually the cause of death.
Well, it's the lack of evolution, right? And so one would conceive that evolution of the mind is just as necessary as evolution of the body. You know, if you don't grow a certain kind of beak, you can't eat a certain kind of nut and you starve to death, right? If you don't learn how to use a cell phone, you're going to be cut off from the world, and your entire social life is going to fall into complete disarray, all right?
Well.
See, isn't that one of the unfortunate things, is that technology has actually started to make us dependent on it rather than independent of it. It's part of the way of life. You know, you need microphones, you need computers, you need editing programs and so on and so forth to make your music. I need it to make this radio program. Without it, we wouldn't have it at all.
For sure. And it's all made up of nature as well. Everything is nature. Every single thing is nature. There's not one thing that in the world that's not nature. So that's one way that I alchemize all of my use of technology. Is this is just a very defined, refined form of nature. It's an official art, or artificial, as you say.
Mm. Now, as a musician, what do you feel are the most important aspects of your music? Like, what do you feel, and what do you wish your audience should feel?
Well,
it depend on the song, of course.
Yeah, definitely. Overall, I'm in a mood of bliss. My music ends up expressing many different aspects. I have some angry music. I have some social music where I'm talking about social situations and political situations. It's mainly spiritual. It's mainly alchemy in my music. I teach how to view things from a different way, from an imaginative way, from a way that helps us to form our own unlimited opinions, or maybe build upon our unlimited potential more so than promote a fixed or locked in idea. I like to promote many ideas, and I like to stir up controversy and fear behind symbols that many people attach to evil. They attach like Baphomet, the goat head, the 5-point star, snakes, the word nigga, a lot of different things people associate as bad. And I really like to shed light on those things, because I think the more we make things bad, the more we set up a world that has dichotomies and fighting polarities of us against them, the right against wrong, the black against the white, the left against the right, Democrat against Republican, and it's just so stupid to me.
Mm. Well, it depends whether or not the fight is accurate. Let's say, for example, you're exposing the generalized Illuminati, you know, the Bilderberg groups and the trilateral commissions, and the Zbigniew Brzezinski's and Henry Kissinger's and George W. Bush's and Rothschilds and Rockefellers of this world, and you're actually specifically trying to oppose them. Is that a false dichotomy? I think not. I think there's actual evidence to support a real conclusion that there is a credible threat. And if it's just about belief and it's like, oh, those people are heretics because they don't believe what we believe, what we can't actually prove with real documentation and what have you, that's the kind of dichotomy that I don't like. That's the left versus right. That's all of these other false arguments that basically take up everybody's time, next to the football, of course.
Yeah, for sure. I see what you're saying, and I view it from a slightly different way, because I feel that what we resist persists. And so I don't necessarily put up any resistance to those people or those groups, but I do work in magical realms of thought and metaphysics and in voodoo and in an actual work on the earth, because I feel that looking at, like, if I had a child who was out of control and doing bogus stuff, I would have to set some guidelines and set some boundaries down for that child. But to hate or fight against that child would only make that child's rebellion against me stronger. And they would rebel until they're diametrically opposed to me eventually. And so when we hate, we just increase the hate. And when we war, it's just more war. So what I see is, I say peace to George Bush. I say peace to the Bilderbergs. And when I say this, it doesn't mean that I won't stand up for a child that I see being attacked by brutality from police officers. And it doesn't mean that I won't go to a G8 summit meeting if I was called to do that. I support people who do what they must do. But I also feel that sometimes the way we go about it, we're creating those situations instead of dissolving them. I feel the human mind is the most powerful factor in this situation. And if we could direct our focus towards what we want to see happening more than what we're against what's happening, we'll be able to create what we want to happen instead of waste a lot of our energy in tinkering with what someone else has already fucked up.
Yeah, I agree to a degree. And I was just thinking about this. My goal to fight against these people, whether or not it's a fight physically or not, I don't really want to do the physical part. But this is my way of going about it. I figure that they draw all their power from their secrecy, right? From they're occulting all the knowledge, and so I want to de-occult all the knowledge, give it to people, and so that when these people try one of their schemes, they just go, "No, I know what you're going to do," and they're like, "Oh. Damn, our scam doesn't work anymore. I've been robbed of all my power. I can't control anybody because they know what I'm doing with all the power and control that they're giving me willingly."
For sure, for sure. I agree with you. I feel that the deepest occult knowledge, though, that is available anywhere, even to those people, is the unconscious and repressed thoughts and beliefs. In esoteric anatomy, the north was the top of your body, the south was your feet, the east was the spine or your back, and the west was the front of your body. Because in the east, the sun rises or the kundalini rises up the spine. And it's said in like Rolfing and in a lot of the body mechanic where they talk about how the mind stores emotions and traumas in the body, all the unconscious stuff that we repress is said to be in the east or towards the back in the spine. And that's called hidden or occult knowledge. That, like, occult is the hidden knowledge or the stuff that's secret. We have tons of information in our own life that is so secret to us. And there's ways that people, the techniques of initiation, of like ancient African and Australian tribes and indigenous cultures, and a lot of like rebirthing breath work, which I use, and a lot of different techniques are used to make this knowledge born and make this knowledge available to the conscious mind. And that's the knowledge that I'm most concerned, because I think it's what we hold and repress and suppress and is hidden from ourselves in our own mind is what's more dangerous to us and what's sort of recreating the same things we see out there. It's these hidden beliefs that we have that are locked away from us. And a lot of them, like you said, are manipulated by the media. The media makes... They put certain triggers out there and certain they play on mind and psychology in ways that make you store different things in your unconscious mind. So there is an agenda out there for sure, but this agenda is mainly propelled or given power, I feel like, in the Matrix by our own mind and our own unconsciousness, more so than there's an actual power outside of us.
Well, you know, and I think it comes down to complacency. You know, if you're willing to go along with it, it's because you don't know what it is. You know, that's the kind of thing. If like tigers, for instance, here's an interesting story. In India, when people go out into the bush sometimes, they're afraid of getting attacked by tigers, and so they should be. They can be killed by one swipe of his big freaking paw. So what they found is, if you put a mask on the back of your head, the tiger won't attack you from behind. Because it thinks that you're looking right at it. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's like some Wizard of Oz stuff.
You apply that to the Illuminati, you know. They always go for your blind spot. All you're trying to do is rub that magic marker off of people's third eye, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, it's like we're being harvested spiritually, and it's not a game to them. And that's the thing. I've realized how easy my life is. I'm not being tortured or killed, or I'm not having bombs dropped on my city or something like that. Man, my life is sweet. Is your life sweet then, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty decent.
Yeah, man. And the problem is, when things are really, really decent, you get really, really complacent because you've got nothing to motivate you, like an enormous bomb about to drop on your head.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And that's why there are people that are in very desperate situations that are willing to do desperate things because of these situations.
Well, and let's think about that for a moment. The average person out there, and I guess, did you ever used to be one of them average people who didn't know about all of this stuff? Because I was. I fully believed in the system. I thought that cops told the truth. I thought that the justice system was about fairness. I thought that politicians did what they said they were going to do. I thought taxes were legal. I thought police weren't brutal. You know, it just kind of had a bit of a rude awakening.
when you black in America, it's easy to wake up to that. Like early, like I woke up to that when I was like, 11, I read a few books then, and I'm like, yo, this is bogus here. I'm looking around at the world, and, ever since I was little, I was like, people, there's enough resources for everyone. There's no need for anyone to be without food, clothes, and shelter. And, I just looked at things differently ever since I was tiny, and I accepted like my parents and society's beliefs for a little while. And then in my, early teenage time and in my teenage years, I just was like, yo, F all that. I'm a determined for me who I am completely.
Well, if you have that concept of yourself in completeness, I was just thinking, how can oneself ever truly be complete unless you're just no longer yourself?
Well, that's sort of what it is. Like, the self is all. This, when I say the self, we have a local personality that expresses, and that's for relativity. That's so that we can relate. You must have a form and a local aspect to relate in the world of relativity. And then you have another aspect that is omnipresent, your soul, your spirit. It's everywhere, evenly distributed through all time and space. And so you can't really say that there's a self. That would be like a Buddhist concept. But it all depends on how you're expressing it at the time. And I've chose the liberty to be able to express myself however I see fit. For the moment, that's what I chose myself to be, is more of a flexibility, more of a maybe, more of a perhaps, rather than a certainty.
Well, is certainty something that gives people comfort, therefore they crave it and defend it?
For sure. It's certainty is a great delusion. It can be a comforting form of suppression for a little while, and sometimes you need to suppress something. Sometimes you can't have everything revealed to you at once. That, I mean, there would be no fun in a movie if it was all revealed to you all at once. And so that's why people sort of play the game of a gradual unfoldment to make it more of a thespian, more of a dramatic activity.
I'm just thinking about young men that get called up and go away and fight in world wars, 10 million of them, 20 million of them get chewed up. And they're all the ones that really believed and they were doing the right thing. They were certain of it, in fact.
Yeah, it's sad. You wonder how much of that is influenced by the media for them to do that, how much is influenced by economic conditions for them to do that, how much is influenced by school, how much is influenced by their parents. There's so many influencing factors in people's ideas and concepts that we take into account to make our decisions, rather than just going within and imagining a greater vision than what people pre-prepared for us with their institutions.
Well, the institutions weren't there to develop us. They were there to program us. They were there to facilitate something else, like the Industrial Revolution, for example. You know, man, people ain't all getting schooled in the exact same way. So that when they come in, they have to learn how to do all these machines, and they have to learn how to fit into society, have to do what we tell them. Yeah, let's come up with that, some public schooling, bro. Did that work? Yeah, it did. It got everybody into the cities, dumbed everybody down, reduced all the independence, and got people to put up with terrible working conditions. Thank you!
Yeah, it's a big farce. It's like people are so distracted on the schedule, too, that there's, like, not just with the schedule. They're distracted by that and the whole artificial timing and artificial calendars that are set up. And then also by the population, like when you're forced to be around so many people all the time in these cities, you take on their energy and their information into your energy body. And if you don't have techniques to clear that stuff, if you've lost your connection with infinite intelligence that allows you to feel your energy body and feel when it's bombarded with images and information and subliminal triggers from around your environment, you become almost like a zombie. It's almost like you're just going to be speaking and feeling and living out other people's ideas and ambitions and desires quite often and not even know it.
How many of our own ideas are really our own ideas?
That's a great question.
I was making some music with my friend the other day, and a couple of mates of his had listened to a few of our songs, and they picked out this band and that band and what have you. And says, it sounds like this, sounds like that, you know, as you borrow from them. And you go, like, well, oh my God, yes, I did. I think I see the resemblance now. I was just wondering, when you combine two things that currently exist and you make a new thing, is it actually a new thing?
Yeah, I would say it's a new thing and a combination of two old things.
Yeah, I mean, what if somebody put cheese and tomato paste together? Hey, I've made pizza. That's a new thing, isn't it?
In a sense.
Yeah. Well, it's just that means that whatever's there in front of you, let's say you've had a really crap life and you've had it very, very rough. Where does all the best music come from?
It's usually coming from the messed up parts and the pain, turning it into a gem.
Mm-hmm. You know why? Because it takes strength of character in order to do that. Somebody who writes songs that is helped by a sense of character writes songs that can last forever. Whereas you have a look at the music business, which is no longer about the music, it's just about the business, and all this wanky cheese on toast bollocks that just really sucks and has no message. If I had a pair of pliers, I would pull a tooth kind of music.
Yeah, or pull a tongue.
Or pull the finger. And It's interesting, though, because maybe you've experienced this exact same phenomenon. I'm in New Zealand and sometimes go to live acts and what have you, bands that you never heard before and never really hear of since. But they're bloody good.
Yeah.
Right? You've noticed this too, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. There's tons of really good music out there. Sometimes I'm overwhelmed by the amount of good music that I want to keep up with that I can't. There's so much, and it's way better often. Nowadays, there's a lot of music that's way better than what is pumped into people's ears on the radio and on TV.
what did they do with it? I mean, it's like, if you or I had a radio station, big ass network with like the millions of listeners and what have you, that these MTV and other advertising crowds had access to, there'd be remarkably different playlists going, wouldn't there? And what I find interesting about music and lots of art forms, in fact, is that they have the ability to change culture. They have the ability to social engineer to a large degree. What's acceptable in music, what's popular in music, starts to become the culture, and it starts up certain memes and things of that nature, and people start to imitate. You get all these clones of glam bands and what have you back in the 80s, and it just goes on and on and on. Haven't you noticed how some people are very cliche into their music? I mean, even yourself, if I might not put to a finer point on it. A rasta with dreadlocks that's into doing a bit of rapping and having a good time in music. Sounds about right, doesn't it?
For sure. For sure. It all depends on how you want to look at the whole situation. Like, for me, I personally see hip-hop and reggae and rasta as a movement in the urban cultures that has allowed for consciousness to spread and for information to spread that is often kept from people. And so like as far as me and hip hop goes and Lox and my whole thing, all of this is it's just a natural part of the divine movement. Like, there's no scissors or no comb. Like, God didn't make scissors or comb. So as Rasta, it's just natural that we would let our locks grow. As hip hop, we didn't have money for instruments, so it was just natural that we found whatever we could and made music with it. We didn't have our own media, so we found whatever way we could to speak what we saw going on in the hood and to make music that would, one, give people the experience of what we were going through. And the same thing with breakdancing. It's like breakdancing came from capoeira and yoga and different martial arts. And it was a way that those sciences could be preserved in our community, in the urban community, when we weren't being allowed these sciences. The sciences of our culture that existed pre-colonialism, pre-slavery, was stripped from us. And somehow in hip-hop and in the street culture, it all came back to us. The word nigga from Nigeria, from Naga. The word niggas means king in Amharic, Ethiopian. So everything sort of, it all depends on how you look at everything. That's why I say I'm an alchemist, because for me, hip-hop is a divine movement. For some people, they could see it as a Tavistock social engineering ploy. And there's definitely elements of both in anything. Like, there's ways you can use any medium for a dumbing down or for an expanding of consciousness. And really, I just think that there's too much emphasis on the dumbing down. I'm not against the dumbing down at all. I feel that there's a time and a place for everything, but I feel that dumb shit should only be like 1% of the whole spectrum of things, because there's a lot of other things that need to be expressed. And right now, the dumb shit is like 99%. And or more. It's all, I mean, there's hardly a room for anything of value in the present day media, as far as public media is concerned.
Yeah. When was the last time you heard a song that gave you a spiritual experience?
It's usually Motown music or reggae music. There's some new reggae music that does, but it's usually, and like, it's usually very obscure.
Oh, sometimes for me, it's like, it's just so beautiful that you just go, oh my God, that's awesome. You know, you actually kind of have this big shiver up your spine, and you know, sometimes you even shed a tear or something if music's just that freaking good.
You know, there's actually a song on the radio that by a rapper named J. Cole called Crooked Smile that actually did that for me. He's just talking about how in the hood people have, there's like false expectations of beauty and how to be at comfort and at ease with who you are. And it was a good song. And sometimes people will make songs where they really touch on something. I haven't given up on popular culture, like to say I abandon everyone who's a part of it. I keep my ear to it in order that I can alchemize these things, because most people who have their ear to it are either being dumbed by it or they're being in fear by it, thinking about the plot of some downpressers and how people are victims and sheeple. Whereas me, I know that those realities exist, but I'm looking at these things and saying, okay, let's alchemize it. Like the Super Bowl, the two teams who came together were the two states who freed weed, made weed legalized. I personally think that's a divine hand behind the scenes who was allowing the consciousness of cannabis to spread more in this country, because it really needs to, because cannabis is a healing plant. It helps heal all types of ailments and diseases and opens the mind and decalcifies the pineal gland.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And it's also quite pleasant to smoke a Super Bowl.
No doubt.
Yes. Yes. Now, also on the cannabis side of things, there is a lot of development here. We have a number of states legalizing. We have Rick Simpson coming out with his cannabis oil curing cancer. We're looking at some kind of a global ganja revolution to a degree, and it's quite heartening for me because I think that's kind of how I wet my teeth in activism in and of itself. You know, I was helping out the legalized cannabis party here in New Zealand, and Dr. Green from the Dactory, they set up New Zealand's first cannabis cafe, totally illegal, got busted a whole bunch of times and moved on. But at one point there was like a couple of thousand members or something like that. They had lines going all the way through the atrium of this massive factory kind of thing, the people waiting to make their purchases. We're talking about really hardcore cannabis activism, like live like it's legal, you know. Yeah. and they did it, and sure enough, after they tried and been shut down, it starts to crop up elsewhere. Now, isn't that how weed grows? You know, wherever it grows, it winds up popping off a few seeds and it starts growing elsewhere. And it's difficult to get rid of.
Yeah. So that's a good correlation you make there. Because I definitely been in Chicago for the past 5 years. I've performed at and marched at the Cannabis March on Global Marijuana Activist Day, like in May. That's usually in the beginning of May. There's a big protest. And I've also done out of 420 events, which led me to do the last album that I did, which is an all-marijuana album called Green Is All I Need, because I just felt it was that important. Like, I love Mary Jane that much. She's like, she's there for me all the time. And Rasta, we've always said that she's the healing of the nations. Like, when I read in Revelations chapter 22, verse 2, which is 222, you know, I'm always looking at symbology. So when I saw that, I knew it was important. But Revelations 22, verse 2 said there would be a tree of life that would be the healing of the nations, and it would bring forth its fruit every season. And this, in the Bible, fruit was always known as works in the Bible, like what something could do, what it could produce. And cannabis makes clothes, food, shelter. It's good for meditation. It helps education by making paper where we could spread ideas. It's makes It's good for industrial use, like for rope. It's good for cosmetics. It's good for healing and all types of different medicine. It's good for transportation. Henry Ford built a car out of it. They made fuel out of this. It's good for economies. It'll help, like you said, it can pop up and grow anywhere. It can help any economy, especially third world economies that have been suffering. It can help them thrive. That's one reason it's made illegal. It can also help the earth. It removes radiation from the soil and helps. It's a great crop rotation plant. There's so many benefits of that plant, and we don't have to chop down forests in jungles in order to harness the paper and the fibers of it. And all of these reasons for me pointed to that plant was the actual physical representation of the tree of life that was the healing of the nations, because as we free that plant up, that's what's going to allow this sort of, I believe, a utopian almost experience on the whole planet Earth.
Yep. Sounds about right. And we have a song here that you've written, Puff Puff No Pass.
Yeah. That was, you know, I'm on a personal meditation. Sometimes you don't like to share. Sometimes people's lips are too soggy and too wet, and they get your spliff too wet, and you just want to, you know, you just need your solitude. So I just wrote a song about it. You know, I like to a little controversy, twist it up a little. So I pass my chalice around, but when it comes to spliffs, I usually take them to the dome.
Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. Take it to the face, to outer space, I'm blasting. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. This one is personal, but yo, thanks for asking. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. Take it to the face, to outer space, I'm blasting. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. This one is personal, but yo, thanks for asking.
Now don't get me wrong, I like to share with everybody, but this time I ain't getting my spliff wet and soggy. I'm thinking so clearly, but seeing so foggy. I don't do drugs, I am drugs. Salvador Dali, I'ma take this one to the dome. I'ma smoke this all on my own. Roll your own this time, leave me alone. Cause you never look around when the weed is gone. Hit some cushion paper, roll your own joint. From some solitude and smoke, that's my whole point. Opportunists always looking for a split to exploit. Everyone would have their own homegrown if it was my choice. I gotta flame up and hold a meditation. If you try to hit this, you fucking up the rotation. Somehow every occasion, you know when loud blazing pop up out of nowhere, but you ain't part of this equation.
Puff, no pass, puff, puff. Puff, no passing. Take it to the face, to outer space, I'm blasting. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. This one is personal, but yo, thanks for asking. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. Take it to the face, to outer space, I'm blasting. Puff, no pass, puff, no passing. This one is personal, but yo, thanks for asking.
Thanks for having me.
That was very nice.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you got another one here, the drug war featuring Rocker T.
Yeah, he's from Oakland. I'm from Chicago myself, and we linked up for this song. It's pretty much just one of those protest songs against the drug war, because it's just totally messed up here in our country that anyone ought to be in jail for any drug, any nonviolent crime related to drugs, but especially marijuana when that's a part of our culture, part of our culture before slavery, pre-colonial times. We was using that as a part of our culture, whether it's Hebrew or in Africa, in the Native Americas, Central Americas, South America, Australia. I mean, people was getting down with it.
It's very true, and it's been used for about 10,000 years or so, roughly. And so far, according to a lot of sources, hasn't actually killed anybody. And my wife's brother said that to his parents. And they weren't too keen on hearing that, and weren't too inclined to believe it. Neither was my sister. And I go, yeah, of course, it's totally untrue. It's totally untrue, because you're forgetting about all the people that have been shot in the back by the cops running away.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting, because when I got into some trouble with the law because of it, and I was talking with them about it, trying to figure out how they could even feel justified doing what they were doing. And they were like, well, this, it may be a just a plant, but there's so many people getting shot because of it and killed. So it's blood money, and that's blood related to that weed. And I was like, that wouldn't be happening if it could grow freely and everyone could have as much as they need. That's the only reason why there's this fight and people, there's wars in the streets about weed, and people trying to steal each other's weed, is because they're living in a scarce system. I mean, also they're making bad choices and have foolish ways of reacting to their situation that they're in. But it is a common reaction of people to try and fight and take something when they're in that crab in a barrel mentality.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Drug War featuring Rocker T, ladies and gentlemen.
The drug war only exploits the poor. Blacks and Latinos getting locked up more. Said the drug war seeks to suppress the cure and enslave the people for their culture of yore. The drug war makes innocent blood poor. Families tore apart and their appeals ignored. The drug war, it ain't fought offshore. It's against we the people on our own front door. This my mother's green earth, herbs and weeds. Police have no rights to search and seize. Jack gives I and I the herb bearing seeds. No government can come and try and take it from we. Freedom of religion is the First Amendment to the Constitution, and you're not gonna end it. So when we light the chalice, yo, do not get offended. It's a holy sacrament that the scripture recommended. It's our divine right to pursue happiness, and I get happier when I consume the cannabis. It cleared up my asthma. I've been using ever since. That's a testament of my own evidence. No matter where we are, we have the right to be free. And no matter where I be, I'm gonna light up the trees. A prayer unto Haile Selassie, I
sing. Now ya bing de more fire we ya bring.
The drug war only exploits the poor. Blacks and Latinos getting locked up more. Said the drug war seeks to suppress the cure and enslave the people for their culture of yore. The drug war makes innocent blood poor. Families tore apart and their appeals ignored. The drug war, it ain't fought offshore. It's against we the people on our own front door.
Why you wanna blame the weed when it's the thing that the world need? Come on, as every little bird see, the only crime when a slime try kill a bird. Coming in hard with them sterilized, but I and I don't recognize. Stuck a heirloom with a beehive. I and I got to strive, got to stay alive. We calling for justice and peace, resisting the mark of the beast. Not falling for war in the streets. We're making the most from the least, and they're always saying it's a great way. Cause ganja living is a great way. The Babylon man and the Rastaman attende. You better listen, better hear what a man said.
The drug war only exploits the poor. Blacks and Latinos getting locked up more. Said the drug war seeks to suppress the cure and enslave the people for their culture of yore. The drug war makes innocent blood poor. Families tore apart and their appeals ignored. The drug war, it ain't fought offshore. It's against we the people on our own front door.
And we're back. It was actually quite a nice break listening to that. I do very much think of the drug war as personal, because it has affected me directly, you know, affected my family. It actually changed my whole world. Not the drug, but getting busted for it. And it didn't change my world in a good way.
Right.
So how can it be legal to do more harm than the drug you're trying to protect people from?
It's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, it's like it has to be a plot. It's just generating too much money. And the reason why they need it is because they're in a scarce mentality. They're in a lack mentality. When you feel like the resources of the earth are getting short, then you need to exploit people in order to, so that they can become your resources and become your source of money. And so they found a new way to institutionalize slavery through the drug war. And even if you're not locked up for it, when you're paying lawyer fees, when you're paying court fees, when you're paying whatever you have to pay, and losing property, and the government is able to sell this property with fractional reserve banking once again and make money out of nothing from it. It's just another ploy of the system that people are either too afraid, too ignorant, or just too complacent to even speak about. Except for people like you or me and some of our friends and people we hang with.
Well, what's our problem then?
What'd you say?
Well, what's our problem then? Why can't we just deal with it and be a slave like everybody else?
Well, I think we might have smoked too much weed, and it's I mean, honestly, it's... We have in our body, everyone, even people who are against weed, has something in their body called cannabinoid receptors. So it means that our body is wired to want to receive cannabinoids in our body. Now, there are a couple other plants that produce cannabinoids, but there's none that produce them in the extent that cannabis does. And there's also theories, not only just theories, I mean, cultures, the doggone say that cannabis came to Earth from serious from the Sirius star system. The Sirius star system is in Canis Major. Canis, once again, sounds like cannabis. And then you have Anubis, which is the god, the dog-headed god of Egypt, which looks just like, which sounds just like cannabis. But not only that, canine and bis, canine means dog, and bis means two. That's two dog. And Sirius was known as a two dog star, as there's two dog stars in the Sirius system. And so cannabis has been said to come from Sirius in the Dogon tradition. And they say that it's used to commune with God, with God in ourself. It's actually when we attach those cannabinoids to our cannabinoid receptors, it begins to unlock different potentials of our body and of our brain. And the science is so new and not even being researched enough to prove exactly what I'm saying. But it's something we know through experience, just because we tend to flow into a greater stream of consciousness and intelligence when we use it. And I know me using it, I've combated all types of disease and ailments and things that would normally have kept me down and out from working or kept me from feeling at ease. I've been able to use cannabis very triumphantly. So I give thanks for it and for some of the cosmology related by the indigenous people in relation to it.
It has so many values, is the thing.
It is. I feel it's the most valuable plant on Earth.
Well, and the only plant on Earth that has two very, very distinct, distinguishable sexes. You know, you ever seen a male willow tree or a female willow tree? Can't tell the frickin' difference. You see a male cannabis plant and a female cannabis plant, they're very obviously different.
For sure. For sure. That's a good observation.
And because they're the only plant on Earth that's like that, allegedly, it actually kind of lends to my mind at least a little bit towards the direction of what you're saying, that it came from outer space, the outer space weed.
For sure. And you might even be able to see Mary as the female version and Juan or John as the male version, and that's where the name marijuana came from.
It was just Mary Jane. It was a local nickname, marijuana.
Right, Mary Jane. And see, that's how I like to alchemize everything and go to the etymology of it. Another good researcher who does that really well is William Henry. He has similar views as I, that the Illuminati actually has benevolent intentions, and that it's not the Bilderbergs and these people. It's actually in very enlightened, loving people who are working behind the scenes. And he speaks about like Obi-Wan Kenobi and relates that to cannabis. He speaks of the Kenobi tribe as well. It's very, some of his theories are very interesting. I love him.
Yeah, well, I think it's as I mentioned before, it's good to visit things and listen to things that, you know, sometimes appear a little bit whacked out, you know?
Cool. Yeah, for sure, for sure.
You know, because upon first impressions, I was just thinking about this the other day, John, is that if you give somebody a first impression, all the truthers are trying to, like, wake people up. They, like, tell them a piece of information or whatever. But that person hasn't seen the documentary. They don't know the information behind the information that you're trying to connote, so they misconstrue it, and it goes all over the place, and they shoot it back at you. You ever notice that?
Sure.
They start arguing with you, and they start telling you who you are. So you've just met this person. They start telling you who you are. And then you start telling them who they are. You're a slave. You're real. So it's a conversation of two people who don't know each other telling each other who each other is.
Yeah.
And naturally, you don't get very far.
No, it's you can get some short-lived entertainment and laughs out of it, and maybe a little high blood pressure, but I don't think that it does much else.
Unless you get it on video, because have you noticed people love watching people argue like forcefully in the streets on YouTube videos?
They do. I'm actually going to one of my new blogs that I'm going to start like once or twice a month, I'm going to do videos where I'm just building with some of my friends who disagree with me. I have one friend, we have debates all the time. He's more into the Bible. He's more into the Alex Jones version and Ron Paul version of things. And I definitely agree with a lot of it, but there's a lot of points that I disagree with, and we bring up a lot of good points that are great for research and alternative views of things. So I look forward to being able to share some of those conversations.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? And even upon reflection, you can notice how you argue and what you do. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day, and I said to him, no, you're going about it all wrong. You don't tell them what is and what isn't. You just ask them what they think is, you know? You just wear them down with a series of questions. Do you believe that money and power attracts bad people sometimes and they get control of it? Well, yeah, of course. So would you think that it's possible that a whole bunch of really bad people have kind of, you know, just slowly over the last 100 years or so, give or take, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, have slowly taken control of all of the money and power or pretty much whatever they need? Yeah, I guess that's certainly possible. Okay. So, do you reckon there's a bunch of ruthless criminal scumbags that are currently running the globe? No, seriously. Am I the conspiracy theorist now? Or is it perfectly reasonable?
Yeah. I mean, that is a great way. The asking of questions is actually the best way not only to teach, but also to learn. It keeps you in a teaching and a learning state so that, on my Facebook page, I've been asking a lot of questions, and they get a lot of attention because people like to share their opinion. And it's so, not only does it help me spread what I'm sharing, but it also helps me learn what other people are thinking and sharpen my ideas and improve in the ways I'm thinking about things. But a lot of times people think that they ought to come on to your social network post to try and dismantle your personal view or belief. And it's very peculiar to me how people will often seek out others who they supposedly disagree with, but they're on their page all the time. Certain people come on my page all the time in disagreement with me, but they're the ones who sought me out in the first place. So I find it interesting. I know they're attracted to some of my alternative views for sure, but sometimes might not know how to express appreciation for the differing views, because sometimes they can be so shattering to your paradigm. I talk about physical immortality a lot, and that really shatters paradigms because it sets us up as sovereigns. You have to be sovereign and totally responsible for your life and your death if physical immortality is an option. And so that most religions people are taught that they have to die, and in school and in science, most of the commonly held beliefs in those institutions are that physically everyone must die. But there's so many traditions like the 8 Taoist immortals of in the Chinese and Taoist tradition who physically they were immortal. In Tibet, you have the 84 Mahasiddhas who and the rainbow body accomplishment is when you turn your body to to light and to a rainbow, and you don't die. You can come and go with your mind and your will through dimensions. And the siddhas, like Babaji, and in the traditions of India, there's many traditions all over the world. Even like Saint Germain in the Europe traditions, people who supposedly learn the secret to not die physically. And when I speak about that, those two words, I could say physical, no one gets mad. I could say immortality, no one gets mad. But when you put those two words together, it shatters a certain belief system. Whether I accomplish it or not, whether it's realized in my lifetime or not, the idea shatters limiting belief structures that have been forced upon us before we came into this incarnation. And I personally see myself as realizing and accomplishing it, because now is all there is, and I'm alive now. So as long as I keep strengthening my life urges and weakening any death urges, I will go on living in eternal health and youthfulness.
If you say so. Just talk to me in 10 years, see how that works out for you.
We'll talk in 100 years. It won't mean anything for another 100 years to many people.
Oh, but yeah, but the proof is in the pudding, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think that the idea, though, helps. But
can I interject something, though?
Please do.
Because there was a dude in India, I'm led to believe, who didn't drink water or eat food.
Yeah.
Prahlad
Jani.
Yeah. And he hadn't been doing that for quite some time. What was it, like 7 years or something, when they conducted the studies on him? And he was just like sitting in a lab days and days on end, just breathing.
Yeah, he said even longer than that. He said he hasn't ate for way over 7 years. He secretes this substance. That's where the word secret comes from, by the way. If we get back to the secret and occult hidden knowledge, the word secret comes from secretions. And that's the most esoteric knowledge in masonry, is how to get your body, how to function properly. Your brain, you know how they say we only use 10% or 5% of our brain. Well, there's ways to activate your whole brain, to activate dormant DNA that you want to come to life and go beyond the caterpillar stage of humanity into the butterfly stage of humanity. That's why there's even a crop circle that was formed recently that was made with man having butterfly wings, because it's some of the more advanced beings attempting to communicate to us, yo, there is a process of transformation that takes place in you, and all it takes is your imagination. You have to imagine it and then believe it and then live it. That's it.
You know, there's a lot of empowering things that people can do in their own lives, you know. And I think that the reason why they don't do those empowering things is because they've gotten a bit too comfortable. They haven't had enough trauma yet to kind of motivate them. You know what I'm saying?
Or they've had so much trauma and they've repressed it and suppressed it, and it's not become activated yet. I think it's sort of the opposite. I think we're all traumatized when we come into this earth. Like, I think birth is the first trauma, when the doctor puts needles in you and cuts your umbilical cord too soon and then slaps you and takes you away from your mom and puts you in some room with strangers, and you're just sitting there and you just was in a womb comfortable with someone that you knew for all this time, and you're took away like that. That sets you up with these pre-verbal thoughts, and you start thinking like things that start to run your life. And these thoughts that run your life begin to run the institutions and set agencies and schools and religions and all these things, with these complex belief systems that further the trauma and the suppression and the repression, so that we no longer live from our blissful self, from our original self, which was just really a pure blissful state of being. Like when you were a baby, even though you were traumatized like that, you still had your bliss, your deeper connection to bliss. But as the parental disapproval, like parents who came up with the same traumas through the same schools, through the same religions, through the same societal brainwashing techniques, are forcing these different paradigms of right and wrong on their children and limiting their imagination and their creativity. And then the schools, once again, it's just a recurring cycle. And so I think the trauma is there on everybody, even just in a Western society where it seems there's no bombs and no threats of, there's a different type of trauma. Like Bob Marley said, everyone thinks his burden is the heaviest. Like everywhere there is a burden somewhere and a trauma. I think it's mainly our problem in the West is suppression. We have so many distractions to.
Oh, and how many drugs are there?
Exactly. All these artificial pharmaceutical drugs that cover us up and even alcoholism. There is a healthy use of alcohol. There's a healthy use of natural tobacco. There's a healthy use of even pharmaceutical drugs if a responsible doctor knows how to share them. But currently, we are in a society where people are irresponsible. They're no longer sovereigns, no longer aware of the power of their own energy body, and have suppressed it for fear of what those thoughts and what those things mean. And that's why I give thanks for some of these triggers, though, that are in society, because I don't give thanks that people were killed in 9/11 in the Twin Towers. That there's a great tragedy in that. Yet simultaneously, how many people decided to wake up? How many people decided to change from that trigger that was used? There was an intention behind it to use it as a trigger to cause more fear and to keep people more complacent. But how many people went the other way and are starting to become more enlightened from observing the fucked up things? And that's what I like to focus on, the alchemy ability that we have within us in the midst of any fuckery that any group is doing.
Any scumbaggery needs to be exposed, you know? And I was just thinking as you're saying this, like, how are news journalists supposed to believe what they're seeing on 9/11, you know, and report the anniversary every year? And it's like, yeah, it happened. It was planes. yeah, there was some fires, yeah. And meanwhile, the guy goes home to his barbecue, and he turns it on. And lo and behold, the grill doesn't melt from a naked flame. So, how can this happen? How does this work? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And so people have become, shall we say, accepting of things that are nonsense. Huh?
Mm, yeah, for sure.
Especially orders given to you by authorities. That weed is bad, I'm going to take you to jail. But that's nonsense. Yeah, but I'm an authority. Oh, okay, it's all right then.
Yeah, the authority thing that relates back to that trauma. Like we've set up this system where we feel we need authorities because when we were little, we were forced unto the authority of our parents, and so we're forced into the authority in schools. And that's not to say that parents aren't guides to children, but parents aren't the authority of what a child decides to think and be. The whole authoritarian system that we have, it's based on this birth trauma. Almost everything relates back to birth trauma. From my point of view,
I saw this video on YouTube of a little baby boy getting a circumcision, and how he's just screaming in terrible pain. It was horrific, and you can just think about it. It happens to so many people every day. And what happens to you earlier in life, I think some studies have come out or whatever, saying that trauma like that at birth sticks with you just as much as a big trauma in your life. You know, if you've ever been held at gunpoint or something like that, or been kidnapped by the Chicago PD. These things are inherently burned into your memory. You can't forget them, but you have to learn to live with them, and you have to do something with them. Because you realize, hold on a second, that bad thing happened to me, but I'm still alive. It didn't actually kill me. I'm not made of glass, am I?
Right.
And sometimes, through traumatizing people, you create the most dangerous enemies.
For sure. That when they swing to the other extreme, or when they integrate it, like Jesus, for example, if you believe in the historical Jesus, he could have been seen to be an example of that, because he was teaching the people of their own personal divinity, and not just teaching it with words, but supposedly accessing the power that that potential connection to divinity has for all people, and sharing that with people. And that was one of the most revolutionary things, teaching people to love their enemies. When you really love and forgive those that attack you, it really pisses them off, because they were hoping to get a reaction out of you and like fuck you up. Because when people attack, it's always a call for love. There's no person who is seeking happiness and joy and peace in their life and fulfillment who just, if they're in their right mind, they're not going to attack you at all. The only reason someone attacks is because their mind is demented because of a lack of love. They have somehow disconnected from being aligned with their source and their true self, which is bliss, and they're calling out for love. They're like, yo, please love me, please forgive me, please teach me what love in Christ is, teach me what forgiveness is, because I don't know it. I'm such a jerk that I have to attack people knowing I haven't learned love. And that's why I use love as my greatest like beam. That's my weapon of mass mass loving. My heart.
My love is my weapon of mass loving.
That's what I'm saying. I know it could sound very, very hippie-ish, but it goes deeper than just saying I love you. Like, what does love really mean? It's not just a sentiment. It's not just a feeling, even though you can have a feeling when you're emanating it, but love is a commitment to life. Love is a commitment to seeing the divinity in yourself and in another person, and seeing the best. And speaking, love is a commitment to speaking to and encouraging that best in you, and giving attention to and encouraging that best and that Christ and that loving spark that you are confident and faithful exists in every single entity. That's what I feel love is.
Well, is it difficult then to love one other person, you know, like a husband and wife kind of thing, if you conversely love everything?
Well, there is something called a special relationship, according to the A Course in Miracles teaching where they say that you can distract yourself from knowing pure, freely given, unconditional love, love no matter what. You can distract yourself from that with a special relationship, trying to make your relationship with your husband or your wife or your children or this friend or that friend more special than another relationship with someone else. There is a balance between, in my perspective, from having this universal, freely flowing love for all people and simultaneously having and developing personal relationships, close personal relationships with your with those that are in your general vicinity. If you come to have a deep love for someone that's freely flowing for your wife or for your girlfriend, does that mean you're going to treat them just like you treat any stranger? No, it's the same way you talk to your children, you talk to the garbage man, you talk to everyone differently depending on what role they play and what role you play in their life.
I think the people that I notice that I talk the most differently to, as opposed to any other kind of person, is the police. I say a lot. I say a lot less when it's the cops, and it's usually no comment.
For sure.
Or I'm just an innocent bystander. Somebody just left this megaphone on my shoulder. I don't know where it came from.
That's smart.
You know, what you're going to do?
That is intelligent.
No, I don't do that. I actually kind of attract attention to myself, come to think of it, and try and make the cops laugh and stuff like that. I like getting laughing cops on camera. It's fun. And the unfortunate thing is some of them... you were talking before about people who just, you know, want to be loved, just want to be forgiven and what have you. I think there's also some people who don't want love, don't want to be forgiven, and actually hate the very idea of it, and hate anybody who's got any love, anybody who's got any good feelings, and just want to crack them down. You know, just real nasty, cruel, and basically the epitome of what one might call evil. Who actually delights in the pain and suffering and torture of others and actually can't live without it.
I think the only way anyone could get to that point is by extreme trauma. And I just look at everyone sort of like a baby. Like, there may be people like that, but they were once a baby and they once had potential to be something else. And if that's the case, am I going to lock them into what I see they've manifested based on what their thoughts and environment allow them to produce? Or am I going to decide that I am the sovereign? I am empowered, and they are, as much as their Wizard of Oz show tries to act like it's empowered, I am the empowered one with my consciousness in my heart field energy. So I'm going to tune into that and create a new vision for them. I'm going to say, you know what? I love you. Whatever love you lacked and your parents didn't give you, whatever was beaten out of you, you know, I'm going to reinstill that and tell you I forgive you and love you. And maybe they didn't want it. Maybe they didn't want it on their conscious level.
Yeah, because that approach didn't work too well for the hippies at Kent State.
No, I know what you're saying. You can't do that right in someone's face, up in someone's face who has guns. Like, that's not necessarily what I'm
talking
about.
That's just not clever.
No, not at all. It's more so of like a persistent belief and vision that you have to hold, not necessarily going out and
of course. As they talk about in urban areas, you know, everything's fine and dandy and everything like that, and you treat everybody with love, but as soon as somebody pulls a gun on you, just freaking run.
That's it. There's a good Ghostface Killah song, and that's all it's about. It's called Run. It's a classic Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh my God, you're a racist thought. Is that half the reason why the African American males can run so fast?
Well, we definitely have to be able to.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I don't get is how, like, I don't sag my pants, but I wonder how people can run when they got their pants sag and their shoes is like unlaced, and or if they got them tight jeans on. I don't know if that was a plot by the Tavistock and the Committee of 300 to get people more catchable. Because I'm sure you can't run your pants falling down like that.
What? I think we may have discovered one of the contributing factors to the ever-growing African-American male population in the U.S. prison system. It is a conspiracy. They started a fashion trend. And now them boys can't run away from the cops, no good. It's a perfect system. You know?
Yeah.
But on a more serious note here, the other thing that I've found that's happening to my perception of the world is that people are actually naturally racist. They all stick with their own tribe and stuff, don't they?
I have coined a philosophy that I've been sharing a lot, especially this month, and it's called race itself is racism. Like, see, if I see things as a pessimist, or if I'm a pessimistic or pessimism, that's because I see like a bad outcome for something, because I'm looking at things pessimistically. If I see the ideal, then I'm an idealist. Well, if I see race, I'm a racist. And I'm not saying anyone's bad for acknowledging race as it was given as an idea or a thought construct. We have to be able to acknowledge that that thought construct was put out there at some time by someone. But simultaneously, I have no association whatsoever with the word African-American, with the word black. Like, my association with the word black is more related to the dark energy and the dark matter that makes up 99.9% of this universe. That's more of when I talk about black, I go to deep metaphysical and quantum physical level about it. And I'll call myself white same way. I'll say I'm white. Like, we're all white because our skeletons are white. I have ways of looking at things that are to play with the ideas of race, because I think race is just that. It's a race. It's something set up to make people compete. And it's set up by the ego, the false ego within us that needs differences and needs similarity.
Sorry about that.
That's all good.
Well, two things. What Morgan Freeman said about race, and I think a interviewer asked him a question, you know, how does it feel as an African-American man? And he says, well, actually, I'm going to call you Jerry, and you call me Morgan.
Right.
You know? See?
Yeah, he said, I don't want to celebrate Black History Month. When is Jewish History Month? Do you want to celebrate that? When is White History Month? And you don't never celebrate that. Why can't it just be American History Month? And the reason it can't be is because race is another ploy used for consumerism, another ploy used for fear, and used to relegate or to create a division and a fight between people based on very superficial differences.
Well, yeah, and there's also an inherent bias in the system as well. It even happens here in New Zealand. Like, I think in what was it? If you are a Maori man, you are 9 times more likely to go to jail for the same offence as a non-Maori man.
Right.
Right. And I think it's the the statistics with African American is exactly the same in the United States. And so what my thought is there's this actual extremely well-funded, well-organized eugenics operation going on here.
Oh, yeah. It totally is. It's totally slavery being reinstitutionalized, and it's set up under the, if you can get people to ascribe to certain racial belief systems, to certain religious belief systems, then they'll undoubtedly almost every time perform in certain problem, reaction, solution methods that you want them to, because you've programmed who what they identify with. It's like, okay, that group of people identifies themselves as black nationalist, pan-African, they're militant people. That group over there identifies themselves as black progressive liberals. That group there considers themselves white progressive hipster liberals. This group over here considers themselves conspiracy theorists and the fringe of society. This group and all these labels that people consider themselves, there's experiments that are done to see how these groups will react to certain triggers, and they do almost, they react the same way almost every time when you are associating yourselves with these belief systems that are really corporate, they're corporate funded behind the scenes, most of them.
What are you saying?
Well, there's just a deep corporate funding behind a lot of religious and academic institutions, whether it's the science or the religions. Both of them are receiving a lot of support in order to keep division at the forefront, and to play down any unity or play down the potential, really to just hide the potential of what would happen if we united and gave up all of the dividing doctrines and dogmas. It's fine if you want to believe whatever you believe. It's fine if you want to be a part, call yourself this nation or that nation. I don't want anyone to have to remove the things that they like about themselves and the way they describe themselves. I would just rather that people have the freedom to make those choices and not be slaves or victims to predetermined ideas and patterns of mind programming that have been laid out for hundreds of years, possibly thousands.
Yeah. Well, it still goes on strong in Hollywood today. You know, you watch any Michael Bay film, there's a comical black characteristic of some kind of creature or character or something like that. You know, I think Dave Chappelle even talked about this, that there's an agenda through Hollywood to kind of demonize and put everything down. And again, it's all inciting that division. You know how many races there are in the entire world? There's one. Mm-hmm. The human race. We're all brothers in this, for frack's sake.
Exactly. And I totally agree. And that racism, that's why I feel that we have to give up the idea of race. Many people are really attached, like they need race to feel special.
Yeah, like they need a race like it's a competition.
Oh yeah, or it's like, yeah, my roots are Irish, like they have nothing to talk about. People are just so boring that they need to be Irish or Greek or Turkey or Cambodian or Ghana, just like you need to say you these things because it helps you identify yourself. But really, your identity is limitless. If you want to identify with where you came to the earth at, that's fine. That's not, I'm not doing
that. I am descended from that particle of dust.
Yeah, like this, it's up to you. But just know that they're all just perspectives. There's no absolute reality to the way we are defining ourselves. And and I think us holding this absolute reality to the way we define ourselves is what causes people to be able to be manipulated so easily, because as long, if you identify with something, then all I have to know is, how does a person who identifies as a Christian react to this? How does a person who identifies as a Republican Christian react to this? How does a person who identifies as a Democrat Christian react to this? And you'll be right almost every time. Once people have those labels that they've given themselves already.
Hey, well, I think that's part of the power of being a politician, is that you have to simultaneously appeal to and not offend all these different types of people, which is why a politician can utter hundreds of words and not say a goddamn thing.
For sure.
You know...
I might have been a good politician if I went down a different path.
Yeah, you'd be one of the whack ass homeboys running your mouth in a suit. The real gangsters. You know, damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Have you ever heard that song by Ghetto Boys?
Oh yeah, I redid it and did "Damn It Feels Good to Be a Bankster."
Oh yeah. Hey, I did a Bankster song as well. Speaking of which, we have a couple of songs of yours still left to go. We got Illuminati Congo, Tell Me Who, OONO, Traptilian, The Conspirators Mixed.
What? Oh yeah, you don't even know.
You what?
It's the acronym UOENO is supposed to pronounce. You don't even know. Like, you don't even know. That's what it's some more that ghetto mind control.
Yeah. Well, it sounded like a card game for a minute there. Like Uno.
Uno.
All right. Well, you ain't even know. You ain't even. What was the game? Okay, let me just get you. I got it.
This shit sound crazy. This shit sound crazy.
Flash it on you.
This shit sound crazy. This shit sound
crazy.
I'll see you now spying in your home. You don't even know. Obama flying them drones and bombing. You ain't even know. Sweatshop, chop labor, popping tags. You ain't even know. Boston bombing was a false flag. You ain't even know. Fluoride inside the water. Why? You ain't even know. Chemtrails flying through the sky. You ain't even know. It's Monsanto and GMOs. You ain't even know. MK Ultra mind control, you ain't even know. They CIA, Quantel Pro, you ain't even know. Who run the globe, on the low, you ain't even know. Passing laws to confiscate the guns, you ain't even know. They the Wizard of Oz, my niggas is guys, you ain't even know.
$1,000 pair of shoes, you don't even know. $1,000 gasoline, you don't even know. Just have me another cut, you don't even know. I came up from bottom, you don't even know. My niggas alright with me, you don't even know. Got killers with me right now, you don't even know. This $1 million watch, nigga, you don't even know. Got a
got $1 million crib, nigga, you don't even know it.
Raising cancer, man-made genocide, we ain't even know. Eating nutrients and pesticides, we ain't even know. A free, infinite energy supply, we ain't even know. All sources die before they testify, we ain't even know. Bob Marley was assassinated, we ain't even know. They killing kids with vaccinations, you ain't even know. We was here before Columbus, you ain't even know. A black president don't mean justice, you ain't even know. Whether it's beating in Bohemia Grove, you ain't even know. This sign, symbol, secret codes, you ain't even know. Whole United States of Corporation, you ain't even know. Prison, the new slave plantation, you ain't even know.
Yeah, man. You don't even know.
Yep. So that's that little tidbits of facts here and there, or things people could research to see if they if it's really true or not.
I wonder if that works, or if the lyrics are only really appealing to people who already know about the topics.
Well, the thing is, I did that song over. Over a beat, like if you could hear on the chorus or the hook, that's some other people's song that's really big in the hip hop scene or in the rap scene. It's not even in the underground hip hop. That's not really our shit, but in the radio, that song is all over the radio, and really a lot of those people got a chance to hear this song, and it's gone pretty far. So I think it's gotten to the ears of at least a few people who, like, that's sort of my mission. I do music to also not just preach to the choir. Like, a lot of rappers and reggae artists who are doing conscious music, it only gets to a certain type of people. It doesn't get to the deep hood and to the people who really could benefit from hearing some different ideas. And I've done a little... best I can to get some things into those arenas, even though I've been living this yogi lifestyle, like I said, since I was a little guy. So it's hard for me to like try to act from a different persona than I am. I'm a yogi, so I'm usually
what, like
gonna
the bear? Start,
huh?
Like the bear?
Yeah, very similar to the bear. Like that's even deep too, because we could break down Ursa Major, which is a star constellation known as the bear. And everything occult knowledge is always related to either the stars or not. Now, I don't want to say either. It's always related to the stars and your body, your physical body, as above, so below. So that's one of the main secrets of masonry. I'm a mason, by the way. I'm an Egyptian mason. It's not something where any of the knowledge is secret. All the knowledge is free. The only things that are secret, like I said, are the secretions that happen inside of us, inside of your body, that are... biophysiological happenings that help transform your body. And then you have certain initiations where what happens in the initiations, that has to remain secret because it's the element of surprise, the element, there's power in secrecy. Like when I plant a seed in the soil, in the earth, you may want it to not be a secret to see how it grows. You may want to watch it grow, but you can't. It needs to grow in the dark and in that secret. And in the same way, some things have to be in the dark for their natural process to unfold. Now, that doesn't mean that I support doing things, sinister things in the dark in order to harm people. That's a different form of secrecy.
Well, in that case, you're not part of the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite of the 33rd degree, are you?
No, see, that's... I'm.
Yeah, because what's happened with Freemasonry is basically the Scottish Rites tried to take it all over, and there's still other pockets of, like, true Freemasonry still out there that's about, like, development and understanding the world and stuff like that, as opposed to one that's kind of just trying to groom you so that they can possess you with a demon at some point.
Use you for their purposes, correct? Yeah, I'm of the Egyptian Rite, which is related to the Kemetic and Moorish science. It's related to Cagliostro and Saint Germain, Tahuti. It's an ancient order, but we're brothers with all Masons, but simultaneously we're supporters of love, truth, justice, equality, and so anyone who's against that, no matter what they may call themselves, anyone who's against that cannot be a Mason according to what Masonry is. But the people who carry on with those names, Masonry and Illuminati, and use it for harm, it's too bad for them, because they're the ones who, they may seem like they're enjoying their life when they're drinking the wine or laughing about someone getting killed or whatever, but I guarantee you can't live like that and not feel pain deep down within you. And it's there's no way that
unless people, of course, you can't feel empathy because you're a clinically diagnosed psychopath. We'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, with John the Baptist Illuminati Congo. Back in a minute, folks.
Pale, 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 politician, can you make a right decision for all of us, for all of us? Pale, 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 politician, can you make a right decision for all of us? Yeah, for all of us.
Welcome back to hour number 3 of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio, broadcasting from New Zealand, the island chained nation, the paradise of slavery and FEMA camp manacles. It is just gorgeous, glorious, rainy, stormy, and with a dash of scumbaggery on top, like a cherry on your whipped cream made of Monsanto goodness that is in 99% of our imported canola oil without labels. You know, you gotta love illusions because they're so comforting, aren't they? People think of New Zealand, they think of this pristine paradise. I mean, it's basically just a glorified third world rubbish dump. Just looks prettier, you know, from time to time. Like a little prime ministerial dictatorship that we've got here. You know, he gets to appoint all his cabinet members who get to run the entire government. So, whatever happens is the role of the person who runs the country. And incidentally, it helps if your party members used to run the media in this country and broker deals between the government to bail them out for like a $37 million debt. And unpaid broadcasting fees because they can't get enough advertising, but they can advertise the government's new agenda to sell off the entire country to foreigners. That's New Zealand. Does it sound familiar to anybody? You know, doesn't it sound familiar to everybody? You know, it's rings within rings. You heard of the fractal? Everything's just a little holographic version of something much larger. Still retains the same form wherever you go. I talked to David Icke once, John, and I asked him, you've talked in like 50 countries or something. He goes, yeah. And I go, well, have you ever stepped off the plane and not instantly started to recognize the little apparatus of the New World Order going up around you?
No.
You know, it's everywhere. It's one of those inescapable things. And I think when there is no escape, the only escape people have is internally, which is why I really vibe with your music. It's very, very good.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, there's internal is the place to go, because the outside show is is the one that if you get caught up in, you're just going to continue to recycle the same reality that you're seeing. So the more that we look at what's going on, it's not to say be unaware of what's happening. You're going to be aware of what's happening because you are alive and what's happening is around you. But to put your trust in that as a greater reality than your imagination is a great detriment towards the revolution. Like, the revolution is not televised. Why? Because it's not on the scene of our eyes at all. You're not going to see it out there. You have to create it within and manifest it and express it into existence, rather than continually just react to the plays and the calls that the shadow governments and these fools behind the scenes are running.
And that's part of the occult knowledge, actually, that they try to keep from people, that you have the ability to manifest things into existence that have real power and real significance. Symbols, symbolism, for example, a good example of that. You know, just think about it, man. They try to make everybody forget that we're capable of that kind of power because they want it for themselves. They're not using it for its intentional purpose. Everything's kind of like a double-edged sword. I mean, look at the internet. Oh, we're going to create this little system that's going to surveil and control and track everybody. Yeah, they'll be our slaves. Oh, that kind of backfired a little bit, didn't it, buddy? Maybe worked a bit, but yeah, at the end of the day, you wouldn't have so much of a, well, quite an irritating time with people like me, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's like what I'm saying is that I feel that whatever is attempted will be foiled because there's a greater power. The greater power is just what naturally is. It's just our being, the true love, light, that is always going to be greater than any plot to go against the nature, to go against the natural, to go against the all that is. And so I don't get too worried. I don't think worrying added a day of life to anyone. I don't, you know, it doesn't make anything better. So.
Yeah. Well, anxiety is just about worrying about stuff that ain't there yet. And, depression is about worrying about stuff that ain't there, has long gone, right?
For sure. And those patterns, they can be valuable if you use them to come out of those feelings. Like, if you recognize, okay, I'm feeling depressed or I'm feeling in fear right now, let me do something about it. Because you usually feel those ways because your thoughts and your habits or your patterns lead you to that. And so it's letting you know, hey, don't think like that. Don't act like that anymore. But quite often we try to fight our emotions instead of looking for a new thought and coming into a new vibration. We just fight against our emotions and we fight against fear, or we'll fight against worry. And when we put up that resistance sucks us even further away from what we're attempting to manifest. And
unless, of course, you obtain victory with that resistance, in which case it empowers you.
Is that, I don't feel that it's ever possible to achieve victory through a resistance. I feel only through integration, through a oneness, because everything that's out there is one with me already. It's just somehow manifesting on a scheme or on a way that we're viewing it as a differentiated happening or dimension.
So you're talking about talking about intellectual things or spiritual things, not about physical things. Like, for example, somebody comes up to you and starts stabbing you with a knife and you don't resist because you believe what you resist persists and you get stabbed to death.
Right. See, it's a different type of approach. Like if someone is coming up to attack you, what you would do is you wouldn't resist whatever energy it is that they have coming at you with. You're not resisting the fact that they're coming at you. You accept that. You're okay, they're coming at me. If you resisted that they're coming at you, then it would persist and they would stab you. But you accept that they're coming at you. And with that in mind, because you support life, you move out of the way or you grab the knife and do what you have to do from there. It's just a matter of how we want to look at it. Like I definitely don't want to associate the word resistance with something good, but at the same time, I recognize what you're saying. There's some point where you say, hey, I am not going to allow that to happen to me. And that is what we are calling resistance from your perspective, and I agree with you.
Well, I mean, there's two types of resistance. What I'm saying is there's the two worlds, physical and metaphysical, and so there's two types of resistance. You know, if you're resisting against something intellectually kind of thing, what you're doing is you're saying, I don't accept that idea. I really don't like it. I'm going to fight against it. I'm going to put all my energy in it. I'm going to stay up late at night. And you're like, honey, aren't you coming to bed? No, there's somebody on the internet that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you wind up wasting your way along it. However, if you just accept it and go, okay, well, I guess that's just one person's perspective. They haven't really supplied any supplementary evidence, and I don't really have the time to look into it. So, rightio. Next.
Yeah, exactly. I see the distinction that you're making. What is resistance in electricity?
I don't know, water, metal, pretty much anything the electricity travels through.
The resistance will strengthen the voltage of a current. The more resistance that you give, or the more friction that you give it, it will increase the voltage. And so it's interesting to look at it that way.
Yeah, but of course, as electricity travels along the power lines, it actually loses its charge and that kind of thing, and there's a whole bunch of dirty electricity that comes off of it. Dirty electricity, which incidentally, the new smart meters are programmed to read, whereas the old meters didn't read the waste electricity that was just coming off. And so now some people in Australia have reported like 40% increase in their monthly power bill.
Wow.
Yeah. See, and you know why they have to pay that extra 40% extra on their power bill? Because they didn't resist getting a smart meter installed.
Well, see, you know, Nikola Tesla, he then came up with wireless electricity. Like, right now we use wireless communication and his vision of wireless communication with these devices, but he already invented and it's in use but not available to the public, wireless power, so you can get power to anything for free. It is free because it's coming straight, it's regenerated straight from the electromagnetic fields of the earth. So it's it's interesting that that technology isn't available to people now, and because we could have a sustainable utopian type of civilization where there's unlimited power and unlimited resources for everyone.
Unfortunately, the only reason why it's not available to everyone is because a few people seize the unlimited power and resources for themselves.
They're in fear of somehow not having enough. And where does that come from? Back to that birth trauma that we were talking about. When you came to the earth, if you got, if you left the womb too early, if your mother stopped you from breastfeeding too early, if you got your umbilical cord cut too early before you learned how to breathe enough air, you may have formed a pre-verbal thought that says, there's not enough, that there's not going to be enough. And so you formed a scarcity consciousness, and then institutions and agencies formed around that. And then people who came into the world who were also feeling scarce and feeling like they lacked resonated with those same groups, and they formed organizations of people who are just big babies who are attracted to the same principles of lack and scarcity, and they're there trying to control themselves and control the whole planet so that they don't feel so insecure that there's not enough.
Well, many ancient cultures have talked about parasitical organisms that take over people's minds that are obsessed with power and control. You know, even I think the teachings of Don Juan. Have you ever read that book?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And what occurs to me is that I know that I'm human, because when I see somebody else feel pain, I feel a little bit of pain. And I think that's kind of what separates them from us. I think that's what gives them the ability to treat us the way that they do, is that when we hurt, they don't feel pain. They feel joy or laughter.
No, I don't know what they feel. See, I think that there may be people who are that psychotic that they do feel some type of thrill, but it's a demented, perverted way that can be healed.
Okay, and but maybe let's say theoretically you were earning $1 trillion a year. Would you still think the exact same way?
Oh, for sure. If I was earning $1 trillion a year, that would be a lot easier to set into effect some of these things that I want to do for humanity. So I would be thinking the same way. I print my own money as well, and I've used this money to buy things. It's not Federal Reserves. It's not any other counterfeit currency. It's Babaji money. It's money that's based on the principle that there is a renewable, sustainable, infinite source of resources available in the universe. And so I print money that expresses these ideas, and that's what's backing the money. And then I play the game of expressing this concept, which is a very valuable concept, in however valuable the concept is that I've explained to people is how much they're willing to trade. So sometimes people have traded me Federal Reserves or other money for this same money. And it's a fun game to play, and it allows me to really get into the mindset that I do have $1 trillion a year available to me. And it's really the creativity and the goods and services and ideas that I'm able to share with more people, the more I'll be able to increase actual transactions of that money that's already there waiting for me. It's already waiting to be tapped. I just have to connect to more people, get some greater services and greater products out to more people and ideas.
You can even create a rap group to promote it called the Babaji Unit.
No doubt. I'll send you some money someday.
Yeah, it'll be much appreciated. I'll see if it works on the power company, eh?
You know, there is.
I gave you poverty money, bro. What more do you want?
There's people who've been having success though with the with accepting for value and doing the whole UCC game. It takes a lot of work and know-how to fill out your papers and your forms properly, and it's a fight if you're going to go that route. But a lot of people have gone that route where they've learned how to turn bills into discharges against the national debt rather than bills towards their artificial person. And it's quite interesting, the if you're familiar with that, the sovereign UCC.
We had a girl down south here. I forget her name off the top of my head, but she withdrew like $15 million. Yeah, just straight up. They put it in her bank account.
Yeah. Wow, too cool.
But then they arrested her.
Yeah.
And, of course, they couldn't charge her with anything because she didn't break any laws, so they tried to break her arm.
Wow.
With three cops on her in the cell. Yeah, mother of nine.
Wow.
And they couldn't break her arm because she had a steel pin in it because she broke it ages ago. Three big, strong men couldn't break it, you know.
Wow, story.
Yeah. This country is rough, bro. You know, like, you ever hear those stories about, like, the Boss Hog, Texas Chainsaw Massacre-type sheriffs and what have you? I'm convinced that there are pretty much archetypes of New Zealand police officers that fit those exact descriptions.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think this is one of the things I love about my country, is that it's quite a beautiful place. If you don't look at any of the dark places within it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You gotta focus on the good, hold that vibration, and you know, your heart and your mind, your heart and your brain, they emit a field that really are so powerful that it makes sense to just stick with the good feelings and don't focus too much on that which will take you out of alignment with it. That doesn't, I would never say to ignore your surroundings, but I'll say more so recognize the primacy of our imagination and of our self-manifesting rather than getting caught in the manifestations of the past that we don't want to relive and recreate.
Mm. Well, I guess I'm just experimenting. I mean, maybe it's a bit ironic because it's kind of like the suffering of others is what compels me to try and help.
It's true. Like, anytime that I'm feeling a good feeling, I think of others simultaneously. Like, I get a feeling for others, like, that I wish this good feeling, this good health, this strength for all people. Like, for some reason, I'm always thinking of myself intimately linked with all people. And the suffering of all people is intimately linked with me. So that means that my joy, though, and my bliss is intimately linked with them. And so if I allow my vibration to become lowered based upon what they've created for themselves, and that's not to say that people have created the suffering for themselves. That, I mean, suffering is something we do create for ourselves through ignorance. We create it through habit. Significantly, I feel, is these traumas that are started with birth, and then the cycle continues with those other institutions that I've spoke of. And those things can be very detrimental if we continue to focus on them and give them energy, that's what they want. Those things only will live, those institutions, so long as we give them energy. But as we begin to draw our focus into our being again, it'll create a vibration within us personally that will reach to everyone just the same way that you can feel their suffering and that reaches to you. You don't want to communicate that back to them like, well, yeah, I'm suffering too. You want to communicate, okay, I feel you. I'm going to raise my mind, my consciousness, raise my creativity, raise my skills, and how raise my money, whatever I can do to help out people that may be in those conditions. So I feel you what you're saying, though, because it's you have a heart. You have compassion for what's going on, and that's the sign of a real sincere seeker.
Well, I think what happens is you see what happens to other people, and what it does in a lot of ways, kind of in a selfish way, is it teaches you a lot about yourself and how you react to it kind of thing. And that's the sort of obsession that I have, is I'm trying to live vicariously through as many people's lives and stories and thoughts and ideas as I can, so I can gain an even broader perspective about how the world really is by seeing it through so many other people's eyes.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's a really, really cool way. I appreciate that a lot.
I mean, what I don't know why other people live their lives the way they do, but this is the reason I live my life the way I do. Yeah. Does anybody even come to that understanding in due course? I'm only 29. I thought it was pretty profound.
For sure. It is definitely profound, because to really not make any of the views the absolute one, not even your own. They're just reality tunnels or ways that we've chose to view and experience our world. It just allows for much more compassion and learning from other people's views. And it makes life more fun for me. So that way I'm not a jerk. Like if someone comes up to me and says they just saw a fairy or a unicorn, I don't have to be a jerk and be like, get your ass out of here. You didn't see that shit. Just because I don't see fairies and unicorns. So I'll be open to, wow, that's very interesting. Tell me more about that.
Describe the situation. Was there somebody riding the unicorn?
Exactly.
Was its horn twisted like a lollipop stick? Yeah, there are some people, and here's the other thing. There actually are crazy people. That's what I've found. I was thinking to it for a while there, you know, is there actually crazy people, or is it just that I don't understand them? And I'm like, actually, no, there are crazy people who believe in stuff that ain't real. And the problem is that they do things in the real world that nobody else's belief structure would actually dictate that they do. Have you noticed that? Like, even if you accept a radical Christian who wants to blow themselves up, right? Even if you accept that idea, the idea still actually poses a danger to you. And I think that that's part of the real importance of ideas in a broader sense, is that some ideas are actually very dangerous and can be misused.
Oh, yeah. You can use any idea for whatever purpose you want. That's what ideas are for. I mean, that's what the mind is for. Many people use the mind just to analyze things that others have already done. But the greatest virtue of the mind, from my point of view, is that you can create whatever you can conceive of. And does that mean that you can transform your body into a werewolf? According to some Native American traditions, why, yes, you can. According to some shaman traditions, yes, you can. And they will swear that it's for real, whereas some other people will swear that they're crazy. And they'll have their proofs of how it happens and how they did it. And other people who don't believe it will have their debunkings of it. And then you have a crazy person, a person who says he can turn into an eagle and jumps off of a building and kills himself. Did he ever change in his mind into an eagle while he was doing what he did? Did as soon as he jumped off that building, he was in another dimension, flying as an eagle in another world somewhere? And what we see happen to that body was just our experience. I have no idea. I'm not here to really completely certify.
Well, let's say he survived and he's bleeding on the ground or something. He goes, damn it, I didn't turn into an eagle. And then he died.
If that happened, maybe he turned into an eagle when he died, because the last thing he said was eagle. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, what you focus on when you die, you become. Or you go to that. Yeah, that's the thing. My mind has become so weirded out by the different realities that I've experienced in my life and that other people have expressed to me, that I could probably see I could probably find a way to explain any crazy thing that is expressed, any of the craziest ideas about blue elephants with heads of lions and with wings. Like, I could probably find a way to explain it, just because I feel that is the best thing about the mind, is that it is creative and imaginative. It's not the analytical part that tries to get all logical. No, that doesn't make sense. That's stupid.
That
part's an okay part of the mind. It has its benefits. I'm not downing it. But I just think that the greatest virtue of it is that we can create and according to what is going to serve us the best. And quite often we create all types of ulterior things than what is serving us the best. So.
Mm. I was told recently about a medical trial. They were trying to do a polygraph tests on drug addicts who didn't believe that they had a problem. And they passed the polygraphs on themselves. They actually believed their own lies.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder just how many of us actually believe our own BS.
I think that's all that is really happening, is we're all just believing our own story.
But somebody's writing the story, though. You know, there's obvious key players, you know, in terms of social engineering. But you're talking about just individualized perception of, oh, it could mean this, it could mean that. But what I seek to do is kind of collapse down the perception, because what was it? There's this sort of spectrum. There's totally not true, possible, and definitely true. Right? Do you believe that such a thing exists?
Well, according to Hermetic philosophy, they say that everything is half true and half false.
And so there's nothing that's actually true and nothing that's actually false?
Yeah, according to Hermetic philosophy, as expressed in the Kabbalion by Hermes. Now, that is just another theory there. And the fact that there's all these theories, and I am not prepared to subscribe to one with certainty, leaves that it must be that. And all of it is true for me. It's either all true or all false for me.
Mm. I kind of choose to believe that it's all false, you know, generally speaking. You know, when we were talking with Jordan Maxwell, he says, nothing that you've ever been told about the way the world works is what you think it is. Nothing.
Right. Like, you have Bob Frizzell. He has the book, Nothing in This Book is True. But it is exactly how things are. And that's a great statement because, and then his second book was called Something in This Book is True. And the books are pretty much identical as far as what they're expressing. And that's because he's playing with the concept to let people know that the way what we call true is all a creation of our own, it's of our own perception. Like, there's no way that someone can be the authority of what is the truth for me other than me. And there's no way I could be the authority for you for what is true. There's no way a textbook or a school can be the authority for that. So Jordan Maxwell, he's a great personality. David Icke, he's great, but are they authorities for what is happening in the world? No, they're great storytellers of their version and their story of reality.
Mm-hmm. And of course, though, there is that 3D reality that we all kind of got a vibe with. And this is where I feel that some of these belief structures get muddled up, is the that perception controls reality, when the reality is you actually have a 3D body. You live in a 3D world. There are plenty of other things going on, sure, but these ones are actually quite sure. And if you push something, it falls over. And that's something like the that's the guideline. But outside of that guideline, there are infinite possibilities of stuff that can happen, could happen, might happen. And I think that's what's quite exciting about games, really, is because at least games have rules that are sometimes pretty hard to break and get away with.
Oh, for sure. There's definitely some pre-existing things that we decided to set up for this game before we all came here. But we all chose that all consciously. We chose the rules to the game, and we've came to a point where we're choosing new rules again. And that it happens periodically. It's not like it happened once where there was one rules and this is the first time the rules of the game have changed. And the game changers, the changers of the rules of the game and the changers of the whole game to a whole different game are the visionaries and the imaginative people behind the scenes often, a lot of times the artists, and a lot of times they're the mystics who aren't confined by religious institutions.
Yeah, and traditionally the good ones get whacked and the bad, and Justin Bieber takes his place. Sorry, it just sounds cynical.
No, he's...
It's unfortunate. Like, you know, one thing that really makes me sad is Tupac.
You know, Tupac, I'm actually, as I'm talking about all these traumas that I'm speaking of, Tupac was one of the main people to speak about it, and that's part of his message that is all erased damn near. You know what the word thug life meant? The word thug life was an acronym that he said meant the hate you gave little infants fucks everybody. THUGLIFE. The hate you gave little infants fucks everybody. And that's about that birth trauma that happens during birth and infancy consciousness when the traumas begin. And especially in the hood and in the ghetto, it gets really fucked up. And Tupac was talking about this. Tupac was about to play Nat Turner in a movie. Nat Turner was a slave who started seeing hieroglyphics in the sky and trees and heard a message that said it's time to free yourself and the rest of the slaves. And he went and did it. And Nat Turner was about to play him in a Tupac was about to play him in a movie right before he got killed. Now, Tupac did have some death urge issues. Like, there's another major issue of the traumas in mankind is the death urge that has been forced upon us by these institutions that teaches us that, yep, anything is possible, yeah, except you will all be taxed and you will all die. Isn't that what they say?
Now, and what's interesting about that equation is people haven't worked out that it's the tax that gets you.
Right, the tax that gets you. And see, that's the thing. As a sovereign, you have to be able to work all of that out. The death urge and the taxes. And it's a fun game. Like, it's a very fun game. It doesn't have to be a drudgery, even though it can be if you opt for that. But the more creative you are, the more fun it is.
I think what we've got here now, whole worlds, whole society, is actually really, really awesome. But the problem is it's all built on a lie currently. You know? Wouldn't it be nice if all the lies were true? That the Congress could be trusted? That the justice system dispensed justice? That the police kept the peace? Wouldn't it be great if all those lies were true?
Yeah, it's going to take our action and not our apathy. I think we're going to have to have a new system of governance implemented, not necessarily tearing down the pre-existing institutions, but right now there's not enough representation in the neighborhoods. Like right now, I have ways that I feel that ought to be expressed to Congress, that I shouldn't have to just call to Congress. No, there ought to be a further extension of government that is collecting the opinions and the wants and desires of the neighborhoods, of a neighborhood representative. And I really feel it could work if the wishes and the views of each person in the neighborhood was taken into account and it was made sure to be accounted for in our law process. Because right now, it's almost like a mob rule. And the thing is, the mob doesn't even agree. It's not even the majority that agrees. So it's sort of like it's not even a mob rule democracy. It's a few people who agree on something, who force feed it to a mob, and then say, hey, the mob agrees with it, so this is the way it has to be.
The traditional name for that person is a demagogue. So we have a demagogocracy. Demagogocracy.
Wow, that's good. I'd like to get the term.
Oh, yeah. And I think these are the demagogue means rabble rouser, basically, you know. And I think that's basically what the politicians have become, don't you think? They're just glorified rabble rousers. They get everybody go, yeah, I want to give up my rights. I love you because I have daddy issues.
Pretty much, there is a major like that going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that's something that the state has been doing for quite some time. You know, they always look up to the state. Oh, you bathed me and you clothed me and you raised me. Oh, no, actually my parents did that, but you're good enough. and you give me money and ID and surveillance and all that time. I just love you, state. And you tax me and you... kill certain people through the police force, and the police never get fired for some reason, or even disciplined. It's unbelievable.
Yes, it's a shame that it happens like that, and it doesn't have to. That is the unfortunate part, that there's actually things we can do to change it, like that Super Bowl. There were so many people gathered together concerned about that. And I like sports. Sports are great, but when they're used to distract you from things of greater importance, the same with the celebrities. I like movies. I like music. It's all fine and dandy for me, but I'm not I'm not going to be the one to be distracted with that shit all day, allowing that to become my thing, like fantasy football and what Justin Bieber did. Even wondering if Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus is part of the Illuminati, I don't give a fuck. What they do doesn't affect me. That is what is distracting people from the real stuff that is happening. What Jay-Z throws up, he could throw up a diamond every single day to a goat and to a serpent and then do a backspin. I would not care. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't take money out of my pocket. It doesn't hurt the ghetto. It doesn't brutalize people. No. What's hurting people is police, the IMF, the Federal Reserve, the IRS, the drug war. Those types of things are really fucking things up. And the more we're talking about Jay-Z being Illuminati, the more we're losing ground with what we could be dismantling, which is these fear-based and superstition-based agencies and institutions keeping people enslaved.
Don't you think there's a spectrum of dominance? Like, they're trying to dominate us from every spectrum, with our culture, with our money, with our resources, all of that kind of thing. And so therefore that it needs a spectrum of people to create better solutions in the face of those, in every single sector. You know, for example, you know, I'm really interested in music, and the Illuminati's big in the music scene. So let's have a look at all of these people here. Ah, there's one. Not going to listen to him anymore. Everybody, stop listening to him. He's Illuminati. How about this guy over here? Yeah, he's much better. And he's certainly not drinking children's blood. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And what's going on back there?
I'm letting my son in real quick. He's just getting home. There may be some occult practices, some insidious type things going on in relation to the music artists or whatever on all the Grammys and Super Bowls. They do a lot of really deeply symbolic things. And does it cause people to become evil or whatever? I don't think so. I think not by itself,
but what if it's everywhere? What if it's embedded into everything? What if in every single movie you're watching, and I watch a few movies, every single movie pretty much has something of an occult symbol in it?
Uh-huh.
And deliberately put in there. And apparently, what was it? Scottish Rite Freemasonry expert, Freda X, I think was his name. He believes that what they've done is actually infiltrate the entertainment industry in order to embed their symbolism, because they believe that by constant repetition of these symbols, it will bring people more in line with the Masonic religion which they propagate, which isn't actually true Freemasonry. It's just an occult basic jumble fluff of what was his name? I forget. But yeah.
Albert Pike?
Yeah, that's the one. Apparently Albert Pike had all these old occult writings and stuff like that, you know, like the offcuts of his diaries and everything, and they just forged some kind of a religion out of it and proceeded to try and dominate the occult world, get the knowledge and get power for themselves and frack all other forms of Freemasonry, frack the Blue Lodges, frack the Egyptians, who cares? And anytime anybody interviews anybody for the History Channel about Freemasonry, it's always a 33rd degree person of the Scottish Rite.
Right. Well, I don't view the symbols now. I think everything's a symbol. This whole universe is a symbol from my perspective, and the universe communicates in symbols. And the way that we ascribe meaning to symbols, the way we draw up the meaning of a symbol, is based on what is within our own consciousness. And there's like, for instance, I use the Baphomet symbology very often, which I don't believe any symbol in and of itself is evil. But when people see it, they're often very scared of it and don't have any of the, they don't, first of all, there's nothing that makes a goat bad. There's been a goat man in our archetype for hundreds of thousands of years, if we're dealing with Pan or dealing with the Shiva yogi version of a horned god. Like, there's always been this horned god, and the fact that people have a version of it in their mind that it's evil today, when back in the day in indigenous cultures, the horned god was actually a symbol for the father god. And now the horned god is evil. And that's because as times change, the gods become the demons become the gods, and it just all keeps switching around in people's minds, because no one is doing the knowledge of self that they're the god. And they're making all of these things up. They're creating them all with their own consciousness. The Baphomet is not evil. Baphomet means baptized in the math. Baphomet can also be read backwards, meaning templi hominem. It's a templi hominem hominem passus. When you apply the Atbash cipher to it, which was a Hebraic cipher, and this cipher says that Baphomet, when you read it that way, actually means the temple of peace among men. And there's so many, like the goat of Mendes in Egypt was a symbol for uniting the higher and the lower self. There's so many roots of these things that people forget about in order to be scared when they see a certain symbol instead of be empowered by the symbol. And why is that? It's because their own fear within them. So every time I watch movies and see Baphomet, if I see a movie and see the eye of Ra or Heru or whatever I see in there, it doesn't scare me to make me think, oh, the Illuminati's behind this for evil. I'm thinking like, oh, that symbol is reminding me of God, of my own divinity. And when I tap into that source, I help all people around the world tap into it, because there's just one mind here. So the more minds that are enmeshed in the
version, difference being, though, you're capable of consciously recognizing that symbol for what it means. What about the subliminal aspects that are affecting everybody who don't know what it means at all and don't even notice it at all?
Right. And also things that maybe I'm not even noticing that might be affecting me, because I can't say I'm totally aware of every single image that's passing by my eyes. That would be ignorant of me. But the things do affect us. But inherently, who we are is who we are inherently. And it's going to take, like, I feel that me tuning into the divinity of the symbol is a stepping stone for each and every person to tune into it. So it takes more alchemists watching these things with a God consciousness, more alchemists listening to these things with a God consciousness to alchemize it and not be afraid, not make it fear-based, but to say, like, there's a rapper.
What His do you think would... Oh, I'm sorry, continue.
There's a rapper. His name is 2 Chainz. He talks a lot about ignorant stuff. Everyone makes fun of him, like he's not real hip hop. He's ignorant as hell. He has a song where he's like, "When I die, bury me in the Gucci store." And then he says, "When I die, bury me next to 2 bitches." Now, when I heard that, immediately I saw in my mind a picture of Asar standing next to the 2 goddesses in an Egyptian hieroglyphic. And immediately when I was thinking of the Gucci store, like, it looks like an Egyptian tomb, the one on Michigan Avenue. And they're always done pretty exquisitely. Like, in our day and age, the exquisite tombs for people are that. And so I personally took that lyric and related to ancient Egypt and to some other symbols. Whereas most people is just like, oh, he's just saying some ignorant stuff. And maybe he was just saying ignorant stuff. I'm not here.
You're like accidentally invoking the symbols of the ancient gods in a rap song about bitches.
That's my theory about hip-hop and the whole thug culture is that there is an underlying divine consciousness, and it takes alchemists to point it out and expose it. And until we step forward and start exposing it, it's going to continue to create the same cycle of fuckery that it's creating.
I wondered what would happen if an alchemist went into an MK Ultra mind control program where they used fear and trauma-based mind control on them, sleep deprivation and stuff like that, and see what they could manifest out of it. Because what I found is you can actually have a really profound effect on somebody, even if their mind is really, really strong. You can still destroy people with these really nasty techniques. There are even people that had their entire memories wiped, like they were trying to figure out a way of using enough LSD to completely wipe the mind and then build a person from the ground up again.
Wow.
Yeah, man, there's some nasty stuff. And that was only because people only found out about these programs because a couple of documents didn't get shredded. Like, there were thousands upon thousands upon thousands. Apparently, this program was massive across the United States. It was happening everywhere.
Yeah, that's why I've never used LSD. I just stick to the mushrooms, the peyotes, and the weeds.
Yeah, yeah. The natural stuff.
That's it.
Yeah, a couple of my mates from Australia, Santos Bonacci and Max Egan, they've been cruising out to South America to take the ayahuasca.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Yes, Bonacci, I like his science. He's dope.
He got arrested just recently.
Oh, no.
Yeah, man. Took a car and a whole lot of things, man. Apparently he's got some ridiculous couple of thousands of dollars worth of fines or something like that from parking or whatever. He's like, oh, I don't have to pay him, I'm a sovereign, mate, you know. But anyway, I'm going to have him on the show. I think in the next week or two, to have a bit of an update from him about it, because apparently, you know, getting arrested, it ain't no picnic, really. Nobody enjoys it. Nobody.
You know? No, not at all. No, and I don't think unless you've hurt somebody, unless you've hurt someone, no one deserves it. That like that. I'm not with people being arrested for anything other than physically hurting someone.
Yeah. If you need to be taken away because you're bloody dangerous. You know, that's about it.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell is the point? Otherwise. Okay, well, thank you very much, John the Baptist, Illuminati Congo. Have you got a website of some description for your people to check you out?
Yeah, we own www.illuminaticongo.com. Our YouTube is pretty popping. We got a lot of videos breaking down etymology and occult science and a lot of things from the perspective that I was speaking from this evening. And my music's all up there as well. Just Illuminati Congo everywhere online. You'll find a bunch of stuff. You'll even find videos about me done by other people claiming that I am the Antichrist and a Luciferian. So there's a lot of entertaining things if you search Illuminati Congo.
It's all good fun, ladies and gentlemen. Now bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast. The shows only get recorded and everything keeps getting done because you, the listener, wish it. This is the deal. I do what I feel is right, try and help people with interesting ideas be heard, whether they be already very famous themselves or have no success whatsoever at getting their stories out through mainstream media sources. Those are the kind of people that I choose to help, those with
voices that actually say something, not those that have some kind of an agenda or something to really ultimately gain for themselves. Instead, people who wish to share information that can actually help and heal and progress humanity down a track towards something better than whatever it is we currently have. It certainly ain't working out very well for most of us. Arguments aside. So go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. It's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And other than that, ladies and gentlemen, stay safe, thank you for listening, and we shall see you again some other time.
You are the only exception. You are the only exception. You are the only exception.
You are the only exception.
You